Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 429 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, and happy new year to you.
I'm doing great, my man. How about you? And happy new year to you, Joe. How you feeling?
Yeah, good, my friend. Always good when speaking with you. The first podcast of 2024. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. 4 days into the new year. It is crazy. So it's the first podcast of the new year, like I say, and there's barely anything to review. There's barely anything to preview. Part one, though, we're going to do the review part, which is literally going to take about 1 minute. Then we're going to bring in our special guest, which is friend of ours, friend of mine, friend of Eddie's, friend of the show, Miss Ivana Habazin, former world champion. She'll be our guest in part one. And then in part two, if there's any news, we'll discuss it there. We'll do the preview part. And then I think I'm going to end the show just pretty much going over the end of year awards that we did last week. I decided to pretty much get into all of my nominations, but give a reason behind the picks. And I spent quite a lot of time noting everything down. I think we're going to probably sign out the show with that. And that's going to be pretty different. I don't think I've ever done that before. I'm going to give my reasons in full on every pick that I made, basically. Anyway, let's dive straight into the review part. We're going to start in Tokyo, Japan at the Ota City General Gymnasium. Over here we saw return to the ring for the WBA World Super Flyweight Champion, Kazuto Ioka. He's now 31-2 with a draw, a knockout for him in round 7 against Josper Perez, who's now 20-4. Relatively straightforward fight there for Ioka. And Daigo Higa as well, with a knockout in round 4. Again, his best days are probably behind him, but he always, you know, I said it on last week's show, you've got to watch this guy. He either will get a stoppage or get stopped, and this time he got a stoppage in the fourth there. He's now 21-2 with a draw, and his opponent, Navapon Kaikana, is now 58-4 with a draw. Yeah, that's it for the review part. I said it'd be quick. It's now time to welcome this week's special guest, the first guest of this new year. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the former IBF female welterweight world champion. It is, of course, Miss Ivana Habazin. Ivana, welcome back on the show.
Thank you so much. It's nice to have you.
Hey, it's nice to have you. So, Ivana, first things first, Happy New Year to you. How was your Christmas, and what did you get up to for New Year's?
And I wish you Happy New Year also. Well, nothing special. Everything was good, you know. I ate good. That's most important. But for the New Year, I was just, like, watching some documentary before midnight. At midnight, I saw the fireworks and went sleep.
Fair enough. That's the life of an athlete. So the last right. time, the last time we had you on the podcast was back in January 2020. It's now January 2024. So it's been 4 years this week. At that time, you were getting ready to fight Clarissa Shields. I ended up coming to the fight and walking you to the ring. We're now friends for life. Since we last spoke, you've made the permanent move to Florida. Tell me about the reason behind that.
Well, you know, like, when I was much, I mean, even the United States is different than, let's say, in Croatia, because you have more people for sparring, right? And for every preparation I had, to fly people in Croatia or go somewhere else was much harder for me, because I don't have nobody to even spar there. then I like the weather here also. So when I come in Florida after many states where I were in United States, I was like, this is the place I like. So, you know, like I stay here, and it's really good for training also. So, you know, like I like this. And as a most of preparation, I always bring in Colombia, in Bogota, right? So it's very close. I don't need to travel anymore 20 hours. Now I have direct flight in 3 hours.
Nice, nice. So
everything is good.
Everything's good. And you mentioned training there. Obviously, the last time we had you on, you were training under Eddie's brother, Steve. What's your training situation now, Ivana?
Well, I have... right now, I'm training with Gary Clark here in Florida. But still, you know, like, for my fights and for advisor stuff, right? That's what I'm always use. I work with James Bashir. But also when I'm in Croatia, and for this fight also, because I will need to be in Croatia a few weeks before the fight, and I was now in Croatia for more than 4 weeks. I trained with my first coach, with who I won 2 world titles. So he's going to be part of the team also now.
Excellent, excellent. Good to hear that. And since the Shields fight, obviously you've had 3 fights in 3 different countries. The biggest of the 3 fights was when you traveled to the UK to fight Terry Harper in May, just 8 months ago. You only had about a week's notice for the fight, and you pushed Terry very close in that fight, Ivana.
Right. Well, that's according to viewers, right? I get a lot of messages, but according to judges, they didn't see the fight that close, what I don't agree. But listen, I'm sure if the fight was somewhere else and you have the promotion, I mean, if I had the promotion, then she would have the same result. But that's what it is. That's boxing, right? If you go somewhere in hometown, you need to knock the people out.
Yeah, no, I understand. And now, please just let the listeners know the situation, because I know it's very political, but let them try to understand the situation. Sandy Ryan obviously won the WBO welterweight world title back in April. She then fought Jessica McCaskill in a unification. The fight ended in a draw. I think a lot of people felt that Sandy Ryan won the fight because she didn't get the decision. People wanted to see a rematch. But this would have meant that you'd have kind of been, you'd have been mistreated, really, if you just sat on the side and watched all this go on. But help the listeners understand your position, because initially people were a little bit confused. They wanted to see that rematch between McCaskill and Ryan that we're now not going to see.
Right. So, I mean, in October 2022, right, I won WBC silver belt. And after that, I became mandatory. I also became mandatory at the WBA. So they put me as official challenger. So WBC has the first call, right? And they call for negotiations. In this negotiation period, they wasn't talk one, like we even tried to contact Matchroom. There was an answer from their side, nothing. Well, then was called for the purse bid. We went for the purse bid. We supposed to, well, we was in some negotiations with the people from Middle East, right? That's why we bid the amount, because we was promised we're going to get that amount. But at the end, that didn't happen. So that I don't use the bad word. They, you know, F us, right? So we needed to pull out from purse bid. But in the meantime, what I want to say, so the mandatory negotiation period was called in November 2022. At that time, Jessica had all the belts, only she did not have IBF belt. So when we're supposed to negotiate for all the belts, right? Soon after this mandatory like negotiation period, she lost WBO belt. So WBO decided to strip her, what is very strange, to be honest with you, because I think somebody else was working on that in meaning matchroom, right? And then they get WBO belt for Sandy Ryan and then schedule the fight for April. So even in our negotiation and purse bid, there wasn't WBO belt anymore, right? So we had this purse bid in February. We won, but we couldn't make it. If we knew we can get more time, like, for example, Matchroom was asking more time to, you know, to schedule the fight, all these things. We didn't know we can get this, so we didn't even ask. We was going by the deadlines. And in the deadline, we couldn't provide what we should do. So we said we can't do it. They said, okay, you defaulted, right? So Matthew was second in line. They took the fight, and they sent us contracts out in March. According to Rick and Jessica, they signed the contract. I signed the contract. In meantime, Sandy Ryan won WBO belt. So after Sandy Ryan won the belt, from I think May 5th or something like that, Matchroom didn't answer or any call, nothing. So we was like, when is the date for the fight? Because they gave us two dates, June 17 or June 24. They also didn't send the contracts to the WBC. WBC gave them the deadline May 18th. On May 18th, they didn't send the contract because they didn't want to do that fight. I think they already had the plans, right? But as I knew on May 19th that there is no fight, so Matchroom defaulted also, but they don't want to say that, right? As I know, on May 19th, there is no fight. When they came to us on May 18, I knew there is no fight. When they came to us on May 19, when Cecilia got sick, the funny thing is, like, when I saw Cecilia sick, I called Charles and I said, Charles, they're going to call us 100% for Terry Harper. And 2 hours later, Charles calling me and saying, hey, they call you for Terry Harper. And I was like, okay, let's do it. I think I can beat her, right? And, but the only reason, was if I keep my mandatory in 147, because I'm going up, I'm doing you a favor, right? And that was the only thing. They say, yeah, everything's going to fine. We're going to do the Jessica fight next, blah, 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 blah. Well, I went fight Terry Harper. After a flight, 48 hours, I was on the plane at the airport. I even came and said, hey, listen, Eddie, is that your thing that you wanted to F me up? So I traveled 2 days. What was crazy, to flight to UK, like 8-hour flights, right?
Right.
And after that, you know, okay, I think fight was much closer than the scorecard says. I lost on the points. And okay, good. At the end, like, sanctioning bodies keep me officially mandatory and challenger, right?
Right.
And we were thinking, okay, now should be Jessica fight next. When they do it, blah, blah, blah. But what was June when they announced that Jessica is fighting Sandy Ryan? So they didn't come to me and say, hey, you're not going to fight now. We're going to go. Can we do that fight? Blah, blah, blah. So we saw that when the poster was out, right? And of course, Charles was then speaking with the sanctioning bodies. Listen, okay, they asked for exception, you gave them, but I'm waiting this from November, right? I earned my position. And then WBC said before the fight happened, so I think that was in August, official letter to the Matchroom and to my team that winner must fight me next. The result was draw, so the winner for the WBC still is Jessica, right? She's keeping her belt. And that's why I was next now in the line for second time. And that's my turn. You understand? I was working for that fight and I was waiting for that fight. Yes, I can say Matchroom came in the meantime because they call and said that's the really fight they want to do. They want to do the rematch. They offer me step aside money. What is shameless, what they offer me, what is disgrace for somebody. who is in boxing, you know, like, I don't want to even say amount because it was disgrace. And I said, no, like, I want to fight for the belt. It's not about money here. I was willing to negotiate it with them, but if they pay what I think I deserve and what wasn't crazy amount, they didn't want to even think, they didn't even come back and nothing. They complained, oh, I didn't want to negotiate. Well, there was this now second time negotiation period with Jessica. They never answered the calls. They didn't want to discuss nothing. When was the time for the first bit, they didn't even bid. So we won the first bit. And now we fight scheduled for April 20 this year in Zagreb, Croatia.
It's such an interesting situation because obviously even Jessica has in the past said some pretty strange things about Matchroom, how she's not really happy. Then she ended up turning around saying, oh, actually, I'm sorry for the comments. But it's interesting because it really does look like, obviously, they just want Sandy Ryan to be able to pick up all the belts. I don't think they care too much about McCaskill, and I think that's probably why she's ended up, why they ended up not bidding and why the fight's going down in Croatia. Let's talk about it. Obviously, it goes ahead April the 20th. Finally, after all the waiting, you were ready a year ago for this fight. It goes down in Croatia. You'll be challenging Jessica McCaskill for the unified world title. She still holds a couple of the belts. Firstly, how happy are you to bring this fight to Croatia?
Listen, this is something would never happen in Croatian history. That's the first thing, because there is no male or female boxer that even fought for more belts in one weight division, and there is not even female boxer right now in the history of Croatia who won two world titles. Like, I have IBF and IBO, right? But we always have the boxer who has one world title. So, like, you know, that's like really big, and I was really surprised because from my announcement, when I post my announcement out, like, there is no news in Croatia from the biggest and the smallest one that wasn't out. There was I think 15, 20 articles in 24 hours, like, you know, like, with crazy stories. I have calls all the time. There is on the TV and stuff. So I think that was, like, probably first time in, like, 13 years, 14 years of my career that this is really out, something big. So I can say I am really surprised because till now, you know my story. I don't want to go from the beginning. It was hard because I never had promoter, I never had TV. You know, I didn't have sponsors like for 8 years. After I took IBO, the other stuff changed, so it was a little easier for me. But this is even bigger than that. So, you know, like, it's really nice. And, you know, there is a lot of these talks, people saying about women's boxing, other women's right, and they're changing something. That's bullshit. Nobody's changing nothing because they are happy with the amount of money they are getting for. Yes, you're talking, but you still have promoters or something who's gonna put up the money. Actually, right now, there is in the world probably 10 fighters, women fighters, who can really live from that. Everybody else struggling. And you know, I didn't even realize how bad that was before, like, when I was on the WBC convention in 2022, right? When you had the champions from Mexico, Argentina, I don't know, Uruguay, when you see that these people has world titles and they can do shit because they're struggling. Yeah, of course, they need to work, they have kids, you have everything, you train the same, and then they treat you like you're not worth it as a man. And, you know, like, there is a lot of discussion, yeah, women's boxing must be 3 minutes. No, I don't agree with that. Because if there are, I didn't say I can fight for 3 minutes. Yes, I can fight for 3 minutes. I spar for 3 minutes. I train for 3 minutes. But the point is, there is, like, WBC was working on that. Also, there are medical statistics why it's better to have 2 minutes, right? And, like, a lot of talks was like, yeah, if we have 3 minutes, we can knock the people out. That's not true. If you can knock in 2 minutes, you're not going to knock in 3 minutes. So, you know, like, that's all type of preparation on the things how you do it. So I don't think so. This 1 minute changing something, and if that's so easy, why they from 15 rounds in boxing, male's boxing, came down to the 12 rounds, right? Because there are statistics why this was happening. And from the other side, I think that the point for women must be, yes, you have 10 rounds, 2 minutes. We should be able to get better paid. I can't say you can get the same because that's not happening, right? But everybody for the titles must be better paid. There must be something, you know, that people, even if they're doing that, they can earn something. Because the point is what I'm trying to say. In tennis, you have men's playing 3 sets, women's playing 2 sets. They get equal pay. From Mary Jinking, whatever is the name now, I don't know. Well, she did the thing where she was fighting for the equal payment, and they get it. And nobody said, oh, you need to do the same as men. No, because you understand the difference between men and women. And men and women can be same.
Ivana.
I mean, they... Go on. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, obviously, I want to discuss the fight itself. How do you see this fight going? At one point, Jessica was a bit of a monster. Very exciting style. However, I think the last few fights, we've seen a bit of a change. I think she may be on the way down the slide, if that makes sense. I think this is a very, very winnable fight for you. I'm extremely happy that it's happening in Croatia. How do you see the fight inside the ring playing out?
Listen, if I didn't think I can win, I will never go and wait such a long time and wanted to fight her. Of course, I think, you know, I think I can win. And I don't think so. The fight's going to be easy because one thing what she has is this aggression, you know, where she was breaking the opponents down. And, you know, like, even... people talking, like, you know, they could say a lot of garbage about Jessica, but I respect her because in every fight, they always have her, like, underdog, you know, against Cecilia and stuff, but she came and she won. So, you know, like, you can't think, oh, yeah, that's going to be easy. I don't think that. I respect her. I know she's going to bring the best what she has because... this is for her probably all or nothing, like it's for me all or nothing, but I think I'm going to win.
And obviously not everyone was happy that the fight got made. Sandy Ryan responded negatively, which isn't too surprising. Why do you think that was? Because obviously Sandy knows all of the, you know, the situation that you've explained there, that you were sitting on the sidelines, you were promised a date, you know, Matchroom didn't deliver, you stepped in and helped Matchroom out by stepping in with Terry Harper on a week's notice or whatever. She will know that you've been messed around and you've been made to wait. So why do you think she responded negatively?
Well, listen, I think that at the end of the day, everybody's thinking about themselves and they feel whatever they feel, or a little selfish because they think they deserve the right. But listen, that's her opinion at the end. You know, I answer her some question. I don't think so she knew all exactly what I was talking before that, right? She answered after that. She said she, like, in her opinion, she thinks the fight is shit, right? But she's not bitter, right? Well, that's her opinion. She said she has fight locked in. I said, good luck. So maybe we meet in this year in the ring, right? But listen, that's the thing. Everybody thinks when something came to them, they think that the things are not fair, right? Because they don't think about nobody else. So, like, I can't just sit and thinking, oh, yeah, this is good. Like, just go because you have the promoter, you are in from the UK, and you have everything. No, I'm not going to be quiet. I'm going to fight for myself, like I said before, because nobody cares from you. Because they think, oh, you're from, like, what? For people, Croatia is probably some garbage, right? So that's how they try to treat you. But if you let them to treat you as shit, then nobody's going to respect you. And I think that's why they don't like me. Because I will always first respect myself, and I'm not going to let you to deal with me like I'm nobody, because I suffer so much more than they did. Like, if I'm in these 13 years in professional boxing, now it's going to be 14 this year. And in this 14 year, I didn't do that for the money, because I couldn't earn money. I can't make existential from the boxing, at least in these 14 years. But I never had the chance to be a site and to do something, you know, like that can, I would say, rocket my career up, because they always call me as opponent. There was always games behind the scene. Like, you know, you can't do normal preparation. They're changing this, they're changing that. Listen, this is probably the first time in my career that everything can go 100% perfect. So if I can deliver the best fight and win when everything is good, then that's it. I'm done with boxing. But I believe I can do it. So, you know, like, that's all or nothing. That's why I said it.
And obviously the Ring magazine is on the line as well, April 20th. I wanted to ask, because I'm really, really intrigued to know the answer to this question. Is there a broadcast deal in place just yet? Do we know where we're going to be able to watch this fight?
It's gonna be, but right now we, you know, we in some things, like always, you know, when you think everything is perfect, it's not perfect. Some things are in the air now, but we have, like, the main, it's going to be Croatian TV.
Okay.
They're going to do the fight probably, but we are trying to finalize now to see, you know, the signals for the other TVs, what is like around the world or something, but it's going to be televised for sure.
Absolutely. And on last week's podcast, we had Natasha Jonas on the show. She also has a belt at welterweight. She's obviously fighting Michaela Mayer on January 20th. How do you see their fight going down, Ivana?
To be honest, I think this fight is more 50-50 fights, but I don't think so that, according to last fight, I saw Michaela Mayer when she fought in division up, that she was that good like she was in her division before, right? So, and still Natasha, you know, is not that young anymore, but she delivered good fights in the last fight she had in welterweight, in super welterweight. She destroyed Candy White, right? And Michaela Mayer is coming to UK. So I would give advantage to Natasha Jonas by point.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good fight. But I agree with you. It's a close one. A lot of people are very confident in Natasha, but I think it's going to be a really close fight, that one. Just before we wrap it up, Ivana, I just want to say, if you've got any closing words, if you want to sign out with a little message before we end the interview, say whatever you like, my friend.
Well, I don't have too much. I just want to say Happy New Year for, you know, everybody who listening to us, who follow us, and I hope everybody's going to have the best year.
There we go. Short and sweet. Perfect message. Ivana, it's always a pleasure speaking with you, my good friend. Thank you for your time. Best of luck for April the 20th back home in Croatia. I will definitely be watching it, and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you so much.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, usually the news. No news to bring you, though, so we're going to move straight to the preview part. We're going to start here at the Virgin Hotels, Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. It's going to be live on DAZN. Good to see that. Let's start with the undercard, of course. We're going to see the undefeated 28-0 Arnold Barboza Jr. getting in there with Zolisani Ndongani, who's now 31-3. It's over 10 rounds, this fight here. Ndongani is pretty much known for his loss back in 2019 to Devin Haney. He lost on points to Devin Haney. Then he did get knocked out in South Africa to a guy called Prince Dlomo. Then he came back on the scene when he boxed Ernesto Mercado in his very last fight. Mercado has actually knocked everyone out apart from Ndongani. He went 10 rounds with him, so I would expect Arnold Barboza Jr. to also go 10 rounds, but should probably win on points. It's great to see the UK's O'Hara Davies with his fight, you know, rescheduled, and it's finally here. Obviously, there was a little bit of a delay getting him into the country a few weeks ago, just before Christmas. It's not ideal, especially that time of the year. I'm sure he wanted to, you know, have his fight, win the fight, celebrate Christmas like normal, celebrate, you know, the new year like normal. But instead, he's had to hold off on the celebrations. Hopefully, he held off on them. I think he probably would have. He's you know, experienced enough now. He's here back in a 12-rounder. 25-2, O'Hara Davies, coming off that win last time against Lewis Ritson. What was 10 months ago now? Great win. He gets in with Ismael Barroso, 24-4 with two draws, 22 KOs, and he's been knocked out in three of his four losses by a KO as well. So, obviously, he's been knocked out by a KO. I don't know where I was going with that. But he's 40 years of age now, Ismael Barroso, the Venezuelan southpaw. Coming off a loss, obviously, last time to Rolando Romero, a fight which was very controversially stopped. He was ahead on all three of the scorecards until the stoppage came in round nine. But yeah, like I say, O'Hara Davies, I'm pulling for him to get the job done. I mean, Barroso either stopped you or gets stopped. So I think the smart money would be on O'Hara Davies to win by stoppage. But I don't think it's going to come early. I think we're going to see a few rounds. Could be wrong, though. We're also going to see in the main event the return to the ring for Virgil Ortiz Jr., currently 19-0 with 19 KOs. Hasn't boxed since August 2022. So he's been out the ring a year and 5 months. He gets in with Frederick Lawson, who's now 30-3. Lawson's been knocked out in all three of his losses. He's a Ghanaian fighter based these days in Chicago, Illinois. He's 34 years of age. You look through his record, not many, you know, noticeable names. You know, I'm looking at the wins he's got. All these guys are pretty much unknown apart from Bradis Prescott, who he beat on a split decision back in 2015 over 10 rounds. He got stopped by Kevin Bizier. People remember him obviously fighting Kell Brook in one of Brook's weak world title defenses. He also got stopped by a guy called Juan Ruiz. That one went down in Philadelphia. That's another guy that I don't think I'm too familiar with at all. And yeah, he was stopped as well three fights ago to Charles Hatley back in 2021. Since then, he's had two fights. They both took place in 2023. He had one in January and one in April. He won both those fights again against complete unknowns. So for me, this is another knockout for Virgil Ortiz. I'm expecting him to be 20-0 with 20 KOs. The only thing is, I will say, as we've been on the topic of people not getting knockouts in the first half of a fight, Virgil Ortiz in his last four fights has gone round 9, round 8, round 7, round 7. So last time he got someone out within the first half of a fight was back in 2019, which now is 4 years ago. Well, 4 years ago, it was December 2019, so 4 years and a month since he stopped Brad Solomon in round 5. But yeah, I don't think he's going to have any problems. I'm just excited to see him back, you know, hopefully 100% fit and healthy. And obviously he's moved up now to super welterweight, where hopefully he'll be, you know, he'll be his best version of himself. He won't be depleted and we won't see any health scares. That's really it for that one there. I don't know if you want to give a word on it, Eddie, before we move to the final card, and there's not much to say there either.
No, not much. Just glad to see him back. definitely healthy. Moved up in weight, which is smart. No passing out. You know what I mean? And trying to make the weight. And yeah, it's a good thing to see him back.
Absolutely. And then the final card to mention, it goes down at the Acca Shriners Center in Richmond, Virginia, USA. I'm not entirely sure if this card is still definitely going ahead or not, but we're going to see Dusty Hernandez Harrison, friend of the show, 35-0 with one draw. He gets in with Norberto Gonzalez, who's 24-14. It's scheduled for 8 rounds at light heavyweight. There was 5 fights initially announced on the undercard, though I've noticed that they've now disappeared, so I don't know if the whole card's fallen through completely from top to bottom, or if we're just going to see one fight, I don't know, because Dusty Hernandez Harrison, who's in the main event, he's also on the matchmaking sheet as well. So he's put some of the fights together. So I don't know if he's, you know, kicked everyone else off the card and just kept himself on. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But like I say, friend of the show, all the best to him. But yeah, that brings the preview part to a close. So like I say, we've done the review part. We had our special guest, Ivana Habazin, on. We've done, well, there was no news to bring you. We did the preview part just there, which was really brief. And now I'm just going to go over those picks again, my personal awards for the end of year 2023 podcast that we did last week. I just want to kind of give a reason behind everything. And this is almost like a bit of a story time now, if you like. So again, if you already know the picks that I gave last week, then you're not going to be surprised by anything I'm going to say, but I'm going to give my reasonings just for people that like a bit of a longer podcast. So let's get into it here. So I'm going to start with Fighter of the Year. Obviously, I gave the number one spot to David Benavidez. David Benavidez is my Fighter of the Year simply due to the too many beat in this calendar year. Obviously, I'm speaking of 2023 here. Two big names, two great champions. He dominated Caleb Plant unanimously over 12. Plant was coming off a great performance against Anthony Durrell. David then closed his year off by stopping the undefeated Demetrius Andrade in 6 rounds. Andrade probably shouldn't even be at 168, but he's still an undoubted talent and he'd waited forever for a big fight. Andrade had a lot of people picking him as a lively outsider. Andrade started brightly in the fight, but within a matter of rounds, Benavidez took over and dished out more punishment to Andrade in just a few rounds than he'd taken in his previous 32 fights combined. The last couple of rounds in that fight were particularly hard to watch until Andrade decided not to come out for round 7. Benavidez has, for me, converted non-believers into believers this year, and almost everyone now has him on the top of their wish list to fight Canelo in 2024. Number two for Fighter of the Year has to go to Naoya Inoue. Naoya has had an unbelievable 2023 and is the pick for most people's Fighter of the Year. He started the year by moving up to super bantamweight and challenging the unified and undefeated Philadelphian Stephen Fulton. There were some very confident people picking Fulton for the upset. However, inside the ring, the fight looked like a mismatch. Fulton couldn't do anything with Inoue, and it didn't take long for Naoya to start putting a dent in Fulton. The fight was heavily one-sided, and in the 8th round, Inoue floored Fulton with a quality left hook. Fulton beat the count, but was stopped seconds after. Inoue then closed his calendar year by going straight after the other unified champion, Marlon Topalez. The fight took place on Boxing Day, and Inoue scored a knockdown in the 4th, but ended up winning by KO in round 10. Some people were left disappointed at the fact that the fight had gone as deep as the 10th round. This is just an example of how high a standard we hold the monster to. He constantly, consistently delivers knockouts. He is the gift that keeps on giving, and he ends his year by becoming just the second man ever to become undisputed in 2 weight classes since the 4-belt era. Top class. Category, again, is Fighter of the Year. Number 3 goes to Joseph Parker. This pick probably came as a surprise for most people, but I couldn't resist. Big Joe has seemingly turned his career back around in 2023 and gets my respect with 4 big wins and his many air miles gained. Joseph kicked off the year in January with a unanimous decision over Jack Massey in Manchester. And I'll be totally honest, I wasn't too impressed with Parker that night. It was Massey's first fight at heavyweight, and never in my wildest dreams did I think he'd manage to last 10 rounds with a former WBO champion. However, it must be stated that Jack Massey, although not a massive name, is a seriously good fighter who should have arguably been undefeated. His sole defeat prior to fighting Parker was a very controversial loss at the hands of Richard Ryakpour. Parker won the fight unanimously over 10. And in May, Parker had travelled to Australia to fight the overmatched Faiga Opelu. Opelu had been stopped twice in the past, both in round 7. Parker got it done in just 1 round. Parker's 3rd contest of the year took place in a 3rd country. Parker boxed on the Fury Ngannou undercard in Saudi Arabia against the heavy-handed Canadian Simon Keane. Parker looked the best he'd looked in a long time when he stopped the Canadian in just 3 rounds. Parker looked lighter on his feet than ever before. His combination punching was particularly impressive, and he showed just how clever he can be when he wants to inside the ring. Just when you thought things couldn't get any better for Parker, they did. He was a huge betting underdog against the former WBC champion and arguably the biggest puncher the heavyweight division had ever seen in Deontay Wilder. The fight took place back in Saudi Arabia just 2 days before Christmas. There were rumours that we'd finally get to see Joshua vs Wilder in 2024 if both Joshua and Wilder took care of their individual tasks on the same fight card. Almost everyone predicted another brutal Wilder knockout. Parker tore up the script and boxed to an excellently crafted game plan. Somehow Parker avoided taking a right hand for all 12 rounds. Some people scored the fight to Parker by shutout. Some people have nominated it for upset of the year. I still can't quite put into words how happy I am for Joseph Parker. It couldn't happen to a nicer guy. A special mention, though, also must go to new trainer Andy Lee. I believe he's taken Parker to another level that most couldn't see happening. Parker's right back in the mix where he belongs, and the sky's the limit based on what he did the other night. He's still only 31 and looks to be at his very best. Fighter of the Year, fourth place, goes to Gervonta Tank Davis. I don't normally have a fourth spot, but I do want to give a special mention to Tank. Tank has also had a great year. Two fights, two stoppage wins. The first in January against the undefeated Dominican Hector Luis Garcia. Hector had sprung an upset in 2022 over Chris Colbert and then picked up the WBA Super Featherweight World title when dethroning Roger Gutierrez in what was a surprisingly dominant performance. He was carrying a lot of momentum when he was offered the fight at the weight above against Tank Davis. Tank does what he always does. He picks his moments well, he picks his shots well, and he throws lightning quick counters. And when an opportunity presents itself, he takes it. He took it in the ninth round and got the stoppage. Davis then targeted another Garcia, this time in the shape of boxing's undefeated heartthrob, Ryan King Raya Garcia. It was basically a super fight. The pair headlined in Vegas in April, live on pay-per-view. The build-up was exciting. People of all ages tuned in with a variety of opinions on what we'd all see in the ring. The fight was actually very one-sided. Gervonta took control earlier than most expected and had Garcia down in the second round. Garcia was unable to really get a foothold in the fight. Gervonta closed the show in round 7 when Garcia decided to take a knee and allowed himself to be counted out. Frustratingly, Gervonta hasn't boxed now in 8 months, despite coming off such a great win. But nonetheless, we're all desperate to see him again in 2024. Two fights, two wins, two knockouts, two undefeated records taken away, and two Garcias. He gets a mention. Category change. Now we're going to go to Young Fighter of the Year 25 and under. Number one, of course, Devin Haney. Very easy pick. No one 25 or younger has come close to doing what he's done this year in boxing. He very well could have been Fighter of the Year, period, but to make way for some of the other guys in the Fighter of the Year category, I've put Devin in the 25 and under bracket simply because he's 25. Devin has been heavily criticised in the past due to his route of becoming world champion and his resume, or lack thereof. This year, however, Devin has gone above and beyond to silence the critics. Two fights, two wins. The first of the two was against the Ukrainian wizard Vasyl Lomachenko back in May. The fight was basically a high-level game of chess amongst two absolute experts. That may sound like it was a boring fight, but it wasn't. Both fighters had their moments. It was a close fight, and some people felt Lomachenko should have got the verdict, but he didn't. Quite frankly, Devin superseded most people's expectations and emerged victorious unanimously. By winning that fight, Devin proved himself to be a worthy undisputed champion with a real anyone-can-get-it type mentality. With nothing left to do at lightweight, Devin made the jump to super lightweight. Once again, Devin threw himself in the deep end without really needing to. He got straight in with the reigning WBC champion Regis Progre. The build-up to the fight was incredibly entertaining. The verbal battles between the fighters and also their teams was must-watch TV. The promo on DAZN was captivating, and I personally couldn't wait for the fight to come around. When it did and the first bell went, Haney simply dominated. He dominated every second of every round and had the whole boxing world applauding his performance. He dropped Progre in the third round and went on to seemingly hurt him many more times. In the end, Haney managed to win unanimously, with all three judges scoring it 120-107. He looked unbelievable at 140, and his power looked better than ever. The future is scary for this young man, and he has rightfully earned himself a place on the pound for pound lists worldwide. Category: Young Fighter of the Year. Position 2, Bam Rodriguez. Bama's also had a great year, 2 fights, 2 wins. It should be noted that for the whole of 2022, Bam was a champion at super flyweight. In 2023, he made the decision to come down a weight, to flyweight. In his first fight back at the weight, he boxed Christian Hernandez for the vacant WBO title. The fight took place in his hometown of San Antonio in April, live on DAZN. Bam won the fight unanimously over 12 rounds. In Bam's second and final outing of the year is where he gets given the most amount of credit for his great 2023. He unified in December in Arizona against the UK's undefeated IBF champion Sonny Edwards. On paper, fans expected a good tactical fight between the two best flyweights in the world. The fight lived up to expectations with a rare mix of high-level chess match and a dogfight in one. The first half of the fight was a chess match. Edwards picked up a lot of the early rounds on my card. It took Bam a few rounds to warm into the contest. Around the midway point, Bam had gotten into a rhythm and began to take the fight to Edwards, who'd been nursing a damaged eye for most of the fight. Rounds 7 to 9 were hard to watch while Bam was punishing Edwards more and more. The fight was becoming more and more one-sided. Bam's pressure seemed all too much for the Brit to handle. After 9 rounds, Edwards' trainer Grant Smith decided to call it off in the corner. Edwards didn't come out for round 10. Bam was 5-1 to get the stoppage pre-fight and delivered that with a fantastic pound-for-pound type performance. Bam has got me blocked on Twitter, but I still think he's a sublime fighter. Change of category now to British Fighter of the Year number 1, Chris Billam-Smith. What a year it's been for Chris. Chris has exceeded all expectations this year. He's gone above and beyond what many people expected he could ever achieve. 2 fights, 2 wins. The first of two came in late May when he battled his former stablemate and friend Lawrence Okolie. In the build-up, Lawrence lifted the lid on the pair's history of sparring together. Lawrence convinced me and almost everyone else that they were simply one-sided beatdowns. Okolie had said that their joint trainer at the time, Shane McGuigan, had even sometimes stopped the pair from sparring because it wasn't in Chris's best interest. Under the bright lights, Chris also hadn't really boxed anywhere near world level, especially with someone as formidable as the undefeated powerhouse Lawrence Okolie. The fight took place outdoors at the Vitality Stadium, where Bournemouth FC play their home games. The script was well and truly flipped when Okolie found himself on the canvas in round 4. Okolie's old habits came back to bite him when he began to excessively hold like he'd done in previous years. The referee took a point away from Okolie for the offence in round 5 and then again in round 7. Chris had to battle through a cut over his left eye, but managed to floor the champion again in round 10 and 11. The fight went the distance and the scores were all over the place. 116-107, 115-108 and 112-112. The whole crowd erupted when the MC said the 3 magical words and the new. Trainer Shane McGuigan was rightfully credited for his perfect game plan and overall knowledge to exploit Okolie's bad habits. Chris's second outing of the year wasn't as straightforward as many felt it would be. He was back in Bournemouth, though this time in an arena, as the weather was simply too cold in December to stage the fight outdoors. His opponent was Polish veteran Matthias Mastanek. Mastanek started fast and began to continuously beat Chris to the punch. Chris was in a lot of trouble as the rounds seemed to fly by, and he wasn't winning them. However, in round 8, the tide began to turn. Chris landed a perfectly placed shot to the ribcage of Mastanek that made him instantly wince. When the round ended, Mastanek decided he'd had enough. Citing a broken rib or two, he retired on his stool. He was ahead at the time of the stoppage on 2 of the 3 scorecards. The other one was tied. Chris had found a get-out-of-jail-free card, and boy did he use it. Against all odds, Chris ended the year as WBO Cruiserweight World Champion, though I think his favourite title was simply Dad, as he became one for the first time earlier on in the year. Number 2, British Fighter of the Year, Tyler Denny. Tyler's 2023 has been a fairy tale. Tyler has truly turned his career around within the last couple of years, but this year he took it to a new, at one point unimaginable, height. He started the year with a points win over the previously undefeated 16-0 Brad Pools. This was the second overall successful defence of Denny's English title. In May, Denny stepped into the ring with boxing wildcard Macaulay McGowan. As expected, the fight went the full 10 rounds distance. It was a closer fight than most expected. I give credit to McGowan for that. A split decision victory for Tyler Denny. The gravy train continued. That fight was for what's called the EBU external middleweight title. I'm still not entirely sure what that means, but basically it's a moody version of a European title. Tyler's third and final fight of the year would be against Italy's Matteo Signani in November. Signani boasted a 32-6 with 3 draws record and was the legitimate, true EBU European champion. Early on, the fight was somewhat scrappy and the veteran Italian had his moments. Though both men are not known for their punching power, both men hurt each other during the contest, which made for fascinating viewing. Tyler Denny created a cut on Signani's left eye at some point in the fight, and it began to worsen as time went on. The corner of Signani advised the referee to stop the fight. This meant that Tyler Denny had just become the legitimate middleweight champion of Europe, whilst claiming his first ever stoppage win. What a way to go out. At one point in Denny's career, he had back-to-back draws with 2 different journeymen. You'd have got a clip around the ear for suggesting he could go on to someday lift the European title. I don't know Denny personally, but from what I've heard, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Category: British Fighter of the Year. Position: 3. Nick Ball. Nick Ball has in recent times emerged as a breath of fresh air in the featherweight division, bringing much needed excitement into the domestic scene. Nick had 2 fights in 2023 against 2 different men from different parts of Africa. In Belfast on May 27th, Nick stepped in with South Africa's undefeated Ledumo Lamati. On paper, it looked like it would be a real test for Nick Ball. The South African started brightly in the first couple of rounds, but as the fight went on, Ball began to take over and started to dominate. He was well ahead on the cards going into the 12th and final round and didn't need a stoppage, but he went and got it. Lamati was too brave for his own good and took many flush shots on the ropes. Lamati's corner threw in the towel. It was a great win for Ball. However, in a flash, panic began to set in when Lamati unexpectedly collapsed in the ring. Lamati was rushed in an ambulance to a nearby hospital and was placed in a medically induced coma. Thankfully, the South African has seemingly made a full recovery and continues to regularly post on social media. Nick's second and final outing of 2023 was against former WBO super bantamweight world champion Ghana's Isaac Dogbe. Now, this was expected to be a real test. We'd really see just how good or bad Ball was. To his credit, he was absolutely brilliant. Some people were stupid enough to think that Dogbe was coming to lie down. They were wrong. Dogbe had a moment here and a moment there, but for large parts of the fight, Ball was dominating the action, outworking Dogbe, and showing just how strong Ball was. He was too strong for Dogbe, too quick, too heavy-handed, and too active for the former champion to ever get a real foothold in the fight. Ball was just as fresh in round 12 as he was in round 1. Dogbe was also put down controversially in round 4. Ball answered a lot of questions that night. Can he keep up his relentless pace for all 12 rounds? You bet he can. Does his power and his punches fade as the fight goes on? It didn't look that way and I wouldn't want to find out. Keep doing what you're doing, Nick. The sky's the limit. Category: British Fighter of the Year. 4th place, Liam Davies. Liam Davies seems to just be unstoppable at the moment. He started his 2023 the same way he finished his 2022, looking nothing short of spectacular. His first fight took place in his stomping ground, Telford. The date was July 29th. He stepped in with the supremely experienced former European champion and all-round tough guy, Jason Cunningham. The fight only lasted 1 round. Davies wasted no time whatsoever getting Cunningham out of there in what was honestly one of the biggest statements seen in a British ring between 2 high-level British fighters for a long time. Davies' second fight of the year took place in Manchester in November against the undefeated unknown quantity Vincenzo La Femina. It turned out that the Italian had a rock-solid chin and a super aggressive style. Early on, nothing Davies could do would deter La Femina from rushing forward. La Femina was knocked down in round 3 with a shot that came out of nowhere. Davies then got too reckless trying to get the finish in that same round and ended up getting dropped himself. Insane drama in the third. I don't think Davies was particularly hurt and I wasn't that worried for him. Davies tends to have a calmness to his craft that is based on his intense self-belief. In the fourth, La Femina was down again. Once again, he got back up and marched back into the firing line. During round 5, Davies trapped the Italian on the ropes and unloaded a barrage of shots that forced the referee to jump in and stop the fight. The Italian complained. The stoppage was good. I wouldn't mind seeing La Femina back on British soil in the near future against some of our other fighters, but he was no match for Davies in the end. Davies continues to prove he's a level above his domestic rivals such as Dennis McCann and Andrew Kane. I truly expect Davies to achieve massive things in the sport, and I'm excited for his 2024. Telford, he's putting the city on the map. Category, British Fighter of the Year. Fifth, Rhys Bellotti. I don't normally list five fighters in one category, but this year I felt I had to, in order to not do anyone a disservice. So last but not least, I have to give a mention to Rhys Bomber Bellotti. Bellotti got off to a quick start in his career after debuting in mid-2015. He was ticking all the right boxes and delivering consistent knockouts. I was lucky enough to be ringside for some of them, particularly being at York Hall to witness his knockout over Jason Cunningham. What a fight. I also recall years ago having a conversation with one of Bellotti's trainers, Jimmy Mack Jr. Jimmy's words were, "Rhys punches holes in walls, that boy." However, in 2018, Rhys suffered a defeat for the first time in his career at the hands of underdog Ryan Doyle. Following the Doyle loss, it appeared that Rhys had gone off the boil. From 2018 to 2021, he had 7 fights, winning 2 and losing 5. Eddie Hearn made comments that Rhys had a job away from boxing that paid very well and maybe he should call an end to his boxing career. In 2022, coming off 3 back-to-back losses, Rhys picked up his first win in 3 years against Dean Dodge. Now that the backstory's out of the way, let's get to Rhys's 2023. His year began in June on the Edwards vs. Campos undercard when he clashed with Yusuf Kamari. Kamari's a good fighter, not a big name, but a good fighter. Those that know, know. It was a fight I was in attendance for and I'd been eagerly looking forward to. It was an excellent fight and the pair certainly stole the show. Rhys was the rightful winner unanimously over 10. Rhys was then back out 4 months later in Liverpool against the former Team GB amateur and undefeated pro Akib Fiaz. The fight was for the vacant Commonwealth title. Akib is a talented boxer with a good skill set. Early on, Fiaz was doing well and at times was a bit too cute for Bellotti. But as the fight wore on, Bellotti did what he does, took the fight to Fiaz and wore him down. In round 8, Fiaz took an absolute pasting. He was knocked down and Bellotti jumped all over him when he got back up. In an interesting turn of events, Fiaz's trainer Jamie Moore threw the towel in with literally 1 or 2 seconds left in the 8th round. But as the round was coming to an end anyway, referee Mark Lyson kicked the towel out of the ring and decided not to acknowledge it. Very bad refereeing in my opinion. It caused confusion as Bellotti started to celebrate, but the fight hadn't officially ended. Fiaz went back to his corner and would have been allowed to come out for the 9th round after having a minute's rest. But thankfully, Jamie Moore decided upon closer inspection that he wasn't prepared to send his fighter out for another round anyway, so it went down as a corner retirement. Bellotti won't mind. I'm not sure what's different about him at the moment, but he's unexpectedly turned his career right around, and I am absolutely here for it. Category change. Female Fighter of the Year. I've decided to nominate 5 different women for this category. I won't put them in order of 1 to 5 because I think they were equally as good as each other this year. My first mention goes to the undefeated unified minimum weight world champion Sunisa Estrada. She began the year with only 1 belt, which was the WBA, and then unified with the undefeated WBC champion Tina Ruprecht. Tina had previously defeated Yocasta Vau in what was an amazing achievement. Tina, however, lost every single round across all 3 judges' scorecards to Sunisa. Sunisa became unified. In Sunisa's second and final fight of 2023, she headlined in Vegas against former long-reigning IBF flyweight champion Leonella Udisa. It was a successful defence of Estrada's unified titles as she boxed to a decision victory. Like her first fight of the year, again, all 3 judges had the exact same scorecard, this time 97-93 across the board. I think there are big fights in the future for Sunisa. I've been a big fan of hers for a long time now. She may look like Jennifer Lopez, but she fights like Teofimo. Category, Female Fighter of the Year. My second mention goes to the undefeated unified champion Dina Forsland. Dina moved to 20-0 this year and should be given extra credit for bringing big-time boxing back to the success-starved nation of Denmark. Dina started her campaign in February, successfully defending her WBO bantamweight world title against former WBO flyweight world champion Deborah Lopez. Dina won all of the first 7 rounds in the contest before recording a stoppage in the 8th. She became the first lady to stop Lopez. In her second and final outing of the year, Dina unified with WBC champ Yulian Avila of Mexico. Dina put an end to Avila's 9-fight winning streak by outpointing her unanimously and widely over 10 rounds. Dina finishes the year as a unified champion, and there are many big names in the division for her to hopefully be matched up with in 2024. Category: Female Fighter of the Year. Thirdly, unified minimum weight world champion Yocasta Val. Yocasta has had 3 fights this year and therefore has been more active than the other girls mentioned so far. Yocasta's first fight took place in March against the undefeated 11-0 Jessica Salazar. Val would outpoint her over 10 rounds for a successful defense. In Val's second fight of the year, she stepped in with the always game Maria Santizo. Santizo was stopped in 4 rounds by Sunisa Estrada, so this was a bit of a measuring stick type of fight. Val dominated Santizo pretty much every round over 10, marking another successful defense. In Val's third fight of 2023, she boxed the experienced former world champion Annabelle Ortiz. Just like her 2 other fights this year, Yocasta won on points in what was a one-sided affair. Val has successfully defended her unified titles on 3 occasions this year and has had at least 1 100-90 complete shutout scorecard in all 3 fights. Pretty impressive. Category: Female Fighter of the Year. Mention 4 goes to the unified light flyweight world champion Jessica Neri Plata. Jessica has had an exceptional year in boxing. They say a real world champion should defend their titles around the world. She's absolutely done this in 2023. Jessica first travelled to Canada with her WBA world title to box the undefeated 16-0 WBC champion Kim Clavel. Kim was expected to win the fight by most people. Jessica pulled off the victory unanimously over 10 rounds in her opponent's backyard, becoming unified champion of the world. Jessica once again had to get her passport out when she travelled to Germany to box the undefeated 17-0 contender Sarah Borman. The fight took place in December and the Mexican once again emerged victorious in a decision win. This means that Jessica has beaten 2 undefeated fighters in their backyards and has also become unified champion of the world in 2023, and it doesn't get much better than that. Category: Female Fighter of the Year. Lastly, a super special mention must go to the new IBF flyweight world champion Gabriela Fandora. Gabriela began her year in Mexico against Tanya Hernandez. Fandora won the fight 97-93 twice and 98-92. In her second fight of 2023, Gabriela stepped in with Maria Santizo in April. Fandora suffered a cut for the first time in her career. Fandora dropped Santizo in round 6, but Santizo showed her toughness to stay in there till the final bell in the 8th. The result, a points victory for Fandora. Sadly, later that same night on the same card, Gabriela's brother Sebastian was knocked out and defeated for the first time at the hands of underdog Brian Mendoza. To put the cherry on the cake, in her final fight of the year, Gabriela took on the reigning IBF flyweight world champion Areli Messina. The fight took place in October in Inglewood. Messina was vastly experienced, and this was her 4th reign as world champion. She was also coming off an 11-fight winning streak. Gabriela dominated the champion from the first bell and was able to dethrone the champion by dropping her twice in the 5th round before the fight was stopped. In what was initially a pretty bad year for the Fandora family, Gabriela has ended it on a huge high, and I suspect 2024 will be huge for both siblings. Category: Fight of the Year. Number 1, of course, went to Beterbiev against Yard. Number 2, I gave to Navarrete Valdez. Number 3, I gave to Andrew Kane against Baluta. I'm sure you'll remember that from last week. The next category was Knockout of the Year. Again, this is no surprise if you listened last week. I gave the best knockout of the year to Samuel Antwi for his knockout against Mason Cartwright. I gave the second one, the second place, to Junto Nakatani for his knockout against Andrew Maloney. And third place, Anthony Joshua with his knockout against Robert Hellenius. I'm going to end all of this by just going into category upset of the year. Number 1, I gave to Ricardo Martinez in his victory against Nordin Ubali. Former champ Ubali was coming off 2 years of inactivity after losing for the first time against Nonito Donaire. Ubali chose Ricardo Martinez as his comeback opponent. Martinez had a record of 9 wins and 9 losses. Martinez was able to win a split decision over 8 rounds. Category: Upset of the Year. Second place, Michael Agundo versus Lamont Peterson. Lamont Peterson's best days have been well and truly behind him for quite some time now. We saw that against Sergei Lipinets back in 2019 when he was stopped in the 10th round. Peterson decided to stop boxing. It was the right decision. However, something made him do a U-turn on that decision and attempt to make a comeback in 2023. He chose 40-year-old Kenyan Michael Agundo as his opponent. Agundo had a record of 16 wins and 16 losses. Agundo ended up knocking Peterson out in the 4th round. It should be noted that going into the fight, Agundo had lost 8 of his last 9 fights, 4 times by knockout. Hopefully that's the last time we see Peterson in a boxing ring. To be honest with you, upset of the year, 1 and 2, you know, Michael Agundo against Lamont Peterson and obviously Nordi Nubali getting beat on points. They could be 1 and 2, they could be switched, I don't really know. I think last week I said it was the other way around, this week I've changed it. They're really neck and neck, those two. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of give a little bit more of an in-depth view on all of my picks across all those categories. So again, I hope that was enjoyable. If it was and I get some good feedback, then maybe I'll do the exact same thing next year when we get to the end of 2024. I'll give a more detailed breakdown. It's a little bit like an audiobook, I guess, kind of telling the story of, you know, the year in boxing summed up in a short, you know, a short recording. So anyway, let us know what you think about that. Or if it was completely boring, then I apologise. But like I say, part one, we did the review part. We welcomed our special guest. Part two, no news. We did the preview part, which was very brief. And then I've just explained all of my thoughts behind all of my picks for the end of year awards last week. I hope that was enjoyable once again. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 429 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the former IBF female welterweight world champion, Miss Ivana Habazin. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. There has been one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show, and it's that Teofimo Lopez will be defending his WBO and Ring Magazine titles against Jermaine Ortiz. That one to go down on a Thursday night, February the 8th at the Michelob Ultra Arena at the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. We're also going to see Keyshawn Davis on the undercard against Jose Pedraza. So it's going to be a big weekend there, or say weekend, weekday of boxing at the Mandalay Bay. Again, that's a Thursday night. Tickets go on sale January the 5th, so tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific time via AXS.com. That's about everything, though, from myself. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.